present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello, and welcome again to the News Quiz. We start with a classified ad seen in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, read by Rory Morrison.
Used tombstone. Perfect for someone named Homer Hendel Bergen Heinzel. One only.
Thanks to Ben Breakwell of Cambridge for that. Let's meet the teams now. Please welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Linda Smith. I'm facing them on my left, Alan Curran and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, what lack of protection let protesters project protection?
Even I know this. Tony Blair has been attacked by, I think, an angry father with a grudge. Gordon Brown, his name was. And they were two chaps from something called Fathers for Justice, or Justice for Fathers, who got into the gallery in front of this incredibly expensive new security screen that is meant to stop all this thing, because they'd won some tickets in a charity auction or at a village fete or something, which allowed them to go and sit there. And their prize was they could go and pelt Tony Blair with condoms filled with purple flour. Blair was pretty brave, I thought. You know, steady under fire, because this thing came and hit him in the back, and he didn't flinch at all. He just assumed it was Gordon knifing him, as usual. And and then there was this magical moment where it exploded, and all the purple flour went over Gordon Brown next to him. And Blair was smiling at the time.
Given that these fathers think that condoms, the way to use one is to stuff it with purple flour, one does suspect that their children were accidents, predominantly.
It's odd how the culture changes. I mean, if you like me, someone who's grown up, but not now, but 50 years ago, embarrassed at asking for condoms. You'd be embarrassed now to ask for purple flour, wouldn't you? I mean, condoms are all right, but if you needed purple flour for anything, you couldn't ask for it, because they would think you were an assassin or a father.
The audience is
transfixed.
Yeah. It's because we were discussing...
Several members of the audience know purple flour as a ladyboy in Bangkok, you realize.
Actually, on Radio 4, they described the condoms as soft-sided rubber packages. It's a bit of a miserable old time for Tony at the moment, isn't it? He must get sick of Gordon Brown coming round all the time going, "And will you be leaving those carpets and curtains, Tony?"
Severe restrictions on public access to the House of Commons have to be introduced after Tony Blair was hit by a flour-filled condom thrown from the visitors' gallery. The press has also made much of Gordon Brown and John Prescott spending 2 hours in the car park of an Argyle oyster bar, deep in discussion. A spokesman for Mr. Brown said claims he was stuck in the back of a Jag with Prescott for 2 hours were utter garbage. It felt much more like 6 hours. 2 points to Francis. Linda, where was the end of the Piers show this week?
Piers Morgan, the former editor of the Mirror, Daily Mirror, has had to resign over these dodgy photographs. Although I don't quite understand it. Now, Francis, you may be able to help me with this. It seems to be some newspaper convention that people, when they're sacked, are escorted from the building, sort of escorted by security, which I felt seemed a little over the top. Were they expecting... What were they expecting, really? I mean, he's getting £1.5 million payoff, so I don't suppose he would have been tempted to nick stationery, would he?
No, it's just... I don't know. It's how they do it. It's the new style in Fleet Street. The old days.
Well, do they expect trouble? What do you think he's going to go, "I'll take you all with me, you slags"?
But he's got off very lightly, Piers. I mean, when he was sacked, all these other editors queued up to say what a splendid person he was and what a great job he'd done, and he hadn't really done anything wrong running these completely bogus photographs. They said, all right, they might have been fake, but what they were illustrating, probably something like that might well have happened. They hit the diaries, you know, when they appeared. You can imagine the Sunday Times saying, well, okay, it was complete forgery, but you know, if Hitler had kept a diary, he probably would have written something a bit. It's essentially true.
It's Piers Morgan, who's seeking at least £1 million from his former employers at the Mirror after they sacked him for publishing fake pictures of British soldiers abusing Iraqi prisoners. Morgan now plans to build on his TV career. He's already being lined up to play half of a detective duo opposite Jordan in a remake of Dempsey and Makepeace to be entitled Tits and Arse. Piers Stephen Pugh Morgan was not only one of the youngest ever British newspaper editors, he was the only one to be named after all the firemen in Trumpton. Jeremy, what capital idea was shortlisted this week?
It's not very interesting, this. We are through to the first round of the selection process for hosting the Berlin Olympics. We've got to have the Olympics in London for some reason. And you think, well, why? Because it will provide much-needed employment for hard-pressed building workers who will be deported as soon as it's finished. And they will build something called the Olympic Village, and then this will become a state agent's parlance, and you'll be able to buy luxury changing room apartments in the Olympic Village after its owners, and there'll be Hoxton artists living in converted trainers. Everyone's mithering about the transport infrastructure is not good enough. Well, they're supposed to be runners. They're not supposed to get... But for some reason, we've got to have the Olympics in London, and we'll be giving directions to shot putters and people. The confused athletes standing there with an A to Z, and we'll have to tell them where to run, because we haven't got a stadium or anything. You'll come out of Summerfield and the javelin will go right through your head.
Two points.
If it happened before you went into Summerfield, it would save you an enormous amount of pain.
The International Olympic Commission has announced that London's made the shortlist to hold the Olympic Games in 2012, along with Paris, Madrid, New York and Moscow. London was marked better than New York, but because of its poor transport infrastructure, fell behind Paris, Madrid and the moon. Alan, listen to this. That was Listen to Your Heart by Sonia. Alan, who's listened to her heart and decided not to become her country's head?
Oh, I thought it was going to be a question about diabetes and the heart and insertions and this new pacemaker.
No.
I thought you would address that question to me because I, alone of all the panel, have more wires, nuts and bolts. It took me 3 hours to go through Heathrow. If I sneeze, I get fused to the national grid. But it's...
Alan, it's about
that woman.
Soon to be appearing in the angina monologues.
It's. it is, of course, Sonia. It's the Indian woman who was spoken to by internal voices and told not to be Prime Minister, unlike Blair, who's spoken to by external voices and told not to be Prime Minister. And she has listened, and she got all the votes and all that and looked at it. And thought it was going to be a bit of a crap job. There are a billion people here who are going to be shouting at me. And I don't think I'll do it now. I think I'll go and do something else.
It's a bit sad. I mean, she did win the thing, and then the BJP said, but she's Italian! And she went, oh, yeah, sorry, and packed up. And you think, after all that, all those years. And, I mean, they are a fascist party, but sort your prejudices out, one at a time. Confine yourself to one line of bigotry, and then, you know...
She should have just said, shut up in your face.
It's the former leader of India's Congress Party, Italian-born Sonia Gandhi, who's decided not to become the country's rulers. Despite being the world's largest democracy, India often has to fight off claims that its elections are riddled with corruption. For instance, things were so bad in 2000 that India nearly ended up electing George W. Bush. At the end of round one, everybody's level. And we start round two with a restaurant review from the Sunday Telegraph magazine.
The main courses were equally delicious, albeit expensive. £16.50 for my husband's tender sweetbreads in a wine sauce with plumped-up sultanas.
Thanks to Peter and Petra Vogel from Purley for that. Francis, who's been putting the nanny into the nanny state?
Oh, it's not the most exciting story in the world. The government...
Not you, too. Francis, a terrific story for you.
Yes.
Who's been putting the nanny into the nanny state?
Well, this is absolutely sensational news, Simon. It turns out that Margaret Hodge, the Children's Minister, is going to introduce a very small tax credit for people who employ nannies, about £50 or something, But only on condition that you earn, you have a joint income of less than about 30,000 quid or something like that, which, so you couldn't afford to employ a nanny anyway.
And you have children.
And you have children. They're laying down all these conditions. And I saw a thing this week saying that the average salary of a nanny in central London these days is 28,000 quid. So if your joint income is about 30,000, then you have to pay 28,000 for a nanny. And also, there are all these other conditions whereby you have to be put on the police nanny register or something and vetted for several months and to check you don't have any dodgy associates like bogus Cockney chimney sweeps and that sort of thing. Hello, Mary Poppins. God bless you, Governor, and no mistake. That sort of thing. Is that right?
There is another alternative. Don't have them.
What, nannies?
I mean children.
Working parents will be offered tax breaks of up to £140 a week to help pay for nannies under reforms outlined by the government this week. The move has already been welcomed by US Vice President Dick Cheney, who hopes to claim for all those times he's had Tony pop over to look after little W. Linda, who'd have us believe that every little helps? Unless it's for their staff.
Every little helps. Oh, Tesco's, who are instituting this interesting new scheme to encourage health in their staff by not giving them sick pay, basically. And they're not going to be paid for the first 3 days of their sick leave. Now, it's a totally ridiculous idea. I mean, I've done my best to avoid work as much as possible in my life, but when I have ventured into it, it's horrible. You have to throw sickies. You wake up and you've got to do that special throwing a sickie voice when you phone in. You just have to do that, like Mariella Frostrock crossed with a Dalek. And you just have to be, I'm not feeling very well today. I've got a bit of a tummy ache. Of course, and then, you know, go swimming or something to cheer yourself up.
Well, if you were John Hurt, you'd never go to work at all, would you?
Hello, love, what's my call time?
Oh, you don't sound well, take the day off. Phoning his agent, anything in for me, love? Oh, you don't sound well. I love John Hurt, but there is a crossover, shall we say. He is of the Sean Connery school of characterisation. So he's Bob. I'm Bob Champion, the Emperor Bob Champion. Yes, Uncle Claudius, I have no testicles. Yes. My name's Quentin Crisp. I'm in another character now.
Under a new scheme being introduced by Tesco, their employees will not be paid for the first 3 days they take off sick. Tesco said the scheme is not designed to penalise workers who are really sick, which came as a relief to new Tesco recruit, Mr. L. Grantham, who works single-handed in the meat and veg department. Which leads us on neatly to Jeremy's question. What's the carry-on about cruising this week?
Apparently, going on a cruise, it's not what you think. Increasingly, young people, it used to be old people, as well, they used to say the cruise of a lifetime, because very few people made it to the end of the cruise to start a new life in Akrotiri. It would be pools winners. But now, you see, people don't do the pools so much. It's younger people. It's people who have already won. A holiday you don't want to go on a coffin ship up the fields with only Joe Pasquale and a Tremolo's tribute band for company. And these cruise ships have got everything that a city has apart from the possibility of escape. And they kept saying about, you know, what, discard your image of going on a cruise. And I just said, my image of a cruise ship is it's upside down and Shelley Winters is swimming underwater. And everyone's going the wrong way. You're going, no, come back, you're all going to die. Gene Hackman knows. But even though his slacks are too tight. But,
you're right, Jeremy. A cruise has all the appeal of being trapped in Butlins and then set adrift. They're quite keen on Jane McDonald.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true.
Well, she's not a land-based life form, Jane McDonald, no. Is she? When singers made it onto land and started walking upright, that's when jazz was born. She's still in the primordial swamp.
It's ocean cruising, which has become one of Britain's most popular holiday options, and is expected to top the 1 million mark for the first time this year. One couple said they'd brought back many little souvenirs from their trips around the Med, including a straw donkey from Spain, a bottle of Retsina from Greece, and amoebic dysentery from Egypt. Alan, what do points make?
I thought, don't points make pets, don't they?
Alan, what do 12 points make?
Yes, you can now get 6 offences on your licence, which means you can be fined up to £350 for each offence, so they actually get £2,100. But when they can only give you 4 offences before they took your licence away because it was 3 points, they can only get £1,400. So it's really another trick by the police and the Nasties and Blunkett and all this filthy crew to take more money off poor drunk drivers.
The last time I was pulled over was in Abbey Road. It was about 3 years ago, and it's wonderful. It's why I love the police. I was pulled over in Abbey Road, and this blue light, you know, they hit the noise and the cherries came behind me, so I had to pull over. And as I got out of the car, I looked up at his 8-foot copper, and I stood on a piece of chewing gum. And he was accompanied by a woman policeman, because they patrol St. John's Wood in male and female. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't blow into the thing just yet. I've stood on some chewing gum. And the woman, who was very nice, said, when you get home, put your shoe in the fridge, and in the morning, the chewing gum will fall off. They charged me being drunk.
Transport Secretary Alistair Darling has announced a more flexible system of speeding penalties. Drivers speeding at 100 miles an hour anywhere face an automatic ban, even if they're just trying to get away from Alistair Darling and his creepy eyebrows. At the end of round two, everybody is still equal. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Radio 4 website.
Listeners to the Today programme sent in over 500 nominations for the saddest piece of music ever heard. Vote now and choose the saddest song of all time. Or visit our Eurovision website.
Thanks to Hugh Pendleton of Locks Heath for that. Francis, listen to this.
Straight down the middle, it went straight down the middle. Then it started to hook just a wee bit. And that's when my caddy lost sight of it. That little white pellet has never been found to this day. But it went straight down the middle, like they say.
Francis, which golfer has been accused of keeping his eye on the ball?
It's a man called David Morris, I think. And he's a blind golfer, as I would prefer, from the West Country somewhere. And he's just come back from Australia, where he won the World Blind Golf Championship for the second time. First person ever to do this. Came back in triumph, only to find that envious people are spreading rumours about him, saying that actually he's not blind at all. He can see perfectly well. And there's an inquiry going on.
Well, that would give him an edge.
Well, it would give him a slight edge. There's a video being produced which apparently shows him walking down the street in his hometown, waving at people on the other side of the road and all that sort of thing, and those telltale signs. But I don't know, because I think the British Blind Golf Association is standing by him. There was a quote from someone there saying, this is typical, whenever a blind person actually achieves something, there's always someone who'll say, oh, well, he's not blind, really. And that is true. Because I do remember years ago, well, the 97 election, there was a Sunday tabloid editor at the time who was convinced that David Plunkett wasn't blind. I remember someone on the paper telling me that at a conference she said, he's not blind, he's just putting it on. I want someone to go and follow him all the way through the election campaign and catch him out. And her staff said, no, I think you'll find he's been blind since birth. You know, he really is blind. No, he's not. And some poor reporter was then dispatched and spent all the election campaign going to Brunkett's press conferences and sitting in the front row and occasionally waving or winking. This poor hack spent 3 weeks trying to catch Brunkett out. Failed. But the moral of the story is, the editor of this particular paper, this great tabloid editor who edited the Sunday Mirror and the Sunday People, I discovered this week she's now running a small market stall down in Kent. So let that be a lesson to all these people who are spreading these terrible stories about the World Blind Golf Champion. You too will end up that way.
This is perfectly true, yes. David Morris, a blind British golfer, retained his world title last month, but is now being investigated after a complaint that his eyesight might be marginally too good for the category in which he plays. suspicions of cheating were naturally aroused by the fact that he's a British sportsman who had won a world title. Linda, which new homes are expecting a flood of buyers?
This is the story of the amphibious houses in Holland. The home country of our own little Van der Valk, Marijke, who scores for us here. Well, I mean, not in any wrong or bad way. She has gone out for stretzels for Jeremy sometimes, but nothing, you know. Fantastic idea. Actually, a really brilliant idea of these houses that are just like normal houses by this river that floods a lot. But when the river floods, the houses just sort of float up and they're on the water. So just absolutely brilliant. I think that sounds great. Of course, a better idea would have been not to build your country underwater, really.
Presumably there are areas of... I mean, if you live in Chiswick, it's quite smart, but if you live in Hackney, it isn't. So, I mean, if it floods and you float to a better area, does this improve the price of your house? And could I get a house and float it to Park Lane, say, well, I'm here now?
Well, it gives the milkman some trouble.
They're boats.
Desperately paddling after you in a dinghy.
They're boats. Sure, and I
read... It's got two giraffes in, you're really in trouble.
With North Sea coastal waters expected to rise, builders in Holland have constructed the world's first amphibious housing estate on the River Maas. The tendency of Dutch homes to float depends on two factors. First, the degree of flooding. Secondly, the number of funny cigarettes the inhabitants have smoked. Jeremy, why does keeping tabs stop birds picking a partner?
This will be penguins. Naturalist people like counting things. They'll count penguins, otters, sperm. They'll count sperm. They're a devil to ring. But they want to know where penguins go. And we know where they go. They go out to sea, eat too much fish, come back months later and throw up in their children's mouths. Which suggests to me that not only should they be tagged, but their children should be on the at-risk register, really. But because of all this electronic tagging of these offending penguins, they're all under curfew, which is why you don't see them when you go to the zoo. Because I took my daughter to London Zoo the other week. It's marvellous. Pay £500 for the two of you, and all the animals are in bed. Nothing moves, not an utter. Next time I'm going to go, who's that right-wing loony who throws keepers to the lions? I'm going to go there.
They put a tag on one of its flippers. And it can't swim as fast as penguins that haven't been tagged, so it's a breeding disaster.
But couldn't they just do community service or something and not have to be tagged? I don't know, but it's a breach of their civil liberties anyway.
They're always dressed for a court appearance, though, aren't they?
Researchers have discovered that flipper tagging penguins slows them down so much they arrive later at British...
That sounds like an insult in a sort of 70s Western. Why, you flipper-tagging penguin?
Researchers have discovered that flipper-tagging penguins slows them down so much they arrive later at the breeding ground and produce fewer chicks. Researchers found that attaching a flipper tag to a penguin impaired its ability to swim in the same way that a human's ability to swim is hampered by the attachment of the words British Gold Medal Hope. Alan, which flabby fighters have been giving the Navy a sinking feeling?
It's Joint Strike Fighter, Eurofighter. Nicknamed now the Flying Prescott because it's too heavy to land. They built this plane. You can get it off the ground, but you can't come down again. I'm not exactly a household word where aeronautical engineers foregather, but if it's too heavy to land, I can't see how it gets off the ground in the first place, so they find out that it's too heavy to land.
No, it's not that. It's too heavy to go on an aircraft carrier. That's its problem. It will sink the ship if they put enough of them on an aircraft carrier.
You mean it can stay outside Wood Green going up and down as long as it likes?
Yeah.
And you try and take it to sea. Oh, it's replacing the Harrier. That's right. And it will sink the aircraft carrier. What sort of aircraft carriers we've got? We'll probably sink it if one of those penguins got aboard.
I'll give 2 points to Alan for knowing the answer and 1 point to Francis for explaining what it was. Armed Forces Minister Adam Ingram has admitted that the MOD is facing yet another procurement disaster after ordering £10 billion worth of American F-35 fighter aircraft that are too heavy for Britain's two new aircraft carriers. This is the most embarrassing British naval cock-up since Captain Cook discovered Australia while nipping over to Calais on a booze cruise. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, this is a news flash that appeared last week on the BBC News website. Breaking news. Hollywood star Gwyneth Paltrow has given birth to her first child. More soon.
Linda.
Oh, this is from Peter Sudbury. It's from The Guardian. And it's from an article on Port and Down in the Life Supplement. The psychological effects of nerve gas were a continuing focus of experiments in the 1950s. In one set of trials, the men underwent a series of intelligence and aptitude tests after being gassed. Portman found that the men were distinctly unhappy and depressed afterwards.
Gerald.
This has been sent in by Alex Morley of Burgess Hill in West Sussex, and it's from Heart to Heart. And it says, bicurious male, 44, brown hair, blue eyes, medium build, looking for fun, Littlehampton.
Alan.
I have one, Simon, from the Sydney Morning Herald. A race at Melbourne Velodrome ended in a double humiliation yesterday for the rider who crossed the finishing line first. To commemorate the centenary of the admission of female undergraduates, 25 of their 2004 sisterhood in long dresses and bonnets competed for the Alice Beaufort Challenge Cup by riding six laps of the track on penny farthing bicycles. When the winner went up onto the podium to collect the cup and a cheque for $1,000, however, a gust of wind caught her skirt. Medical student Robert Conway was immediately disqualified.
Thank you. Well, let's look at the final score. Jeremy and I have 16, but Francis and Linda are winners this week with 17 points. And before we leave you, here's an item from the Whitby Gazette.
Lumsden police want to hear from anyone with information after a graffiti attack on a goat last week. Constable Peter Gear said the goat had the word hello written on it in red spray paint between May the 5th and 6th. He was perplexed about the reason for the attack and the fact that it took place midweek. It's a strange night of the week for this sort of thing, he said.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Wheen, Linda Smith, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news was read by me, Rory Morrison. The chairman's script was written by George Poles, Lucy Clark and Simon Littlefield. And the producer was Simon Nichols.